That's a track from the latest album by our next guest, Chasing Wild Trains. Kim Carnes, who has had some of the biggest hits in the history of pop music, Grammy Award winner, and so much more. And we're thrilled to be joined by Kim Carnes right now. Kim, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon.
Oh, yeah, of course. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great, thank you. The album is so good. I mean, you've done so many great albums through the years. It's funny, we've had listeners reach out and say, oh, Cafe Racers was my favorite and such. But this latest one, Chasing Wild Trains, that is something special.
Thank you. It's definitely a favorite, my favorite. Kind of the only album I think I can still listen to. You know, if you're working on them, it's hard to put them on and play them afterwards, but this one is different. It was such a labor of love, and really I did it by doing writer nights and first doing the songs as they were brand new live and figuring out how they work best, and then calling in my co-writers to come play guitar on them or sing or whatever. So it was a group effort, which to me makes it super special.
Well, and you worked with some very, very talented collaborators, people like Matresa Berg, Kim Ritchie, and it's produced some wonderful material.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you like it.
I like it so much. What's it like there in Nashville? You've been there for a while. What is it about that music scene that you especially love?
Well, there's, you know, especially now, all sorts of music here. It's not like it used to be as far as just a country scene. I mean, on any given night, you can go to a club and hear any kind of music that you want to. And so many people have moved here. You know, it's gotten very diverse, which I think is always better for a city and specifically for a music scene. So much talent has moved here. So much talent already was here. Before I moved, all but one member of my original band had moved here. So, and my publisher was here. So as a writer, I kept flying back to write with different people. And it got to be so often that I thought, well, I'll just move there for a couple years, 2 or 3 years, and then I'll go back to L.A., I'll go back home. But we're still here.
Well, look, of all the accomplishments you've had, gold records, platinum records, Grammy Awards, this might be the most impressive. You and your husband, Dave, have been married now for more than 50 years. How do you make that work?
Not more than. Just don't over-exaggerate. I don't know. You know, it's... I won't say it's not tricky. Marriage is not easy, but it helps being in the same business. You know, when I go on the road, he plays percussion, sings background. He runs our publishing companies. And, you know, we don't now, we haven't for years, but in the past we wrote a lot together. We wrote an album called Gideon for Kenny Rogers. There was a concept album, and it did really well. We wrote that together and a bunch of stuff. So I think, you know, if I was with somebody who wasn't in the music business, it would be really hard, probably impossible. So,
well, I'm glad you brought up Gideon, because I wanted to talk about that album. It was certainly one of the first concept albums in country music, and was a terrific success. And it was Kenny himself who asked you to sing with him on Don't Fall in Love with a Dreamer.
Yes, true. I think it was a party after the Grammys one night, pulled us aside and said he would like us to try to write him a concept album. And the only parameters, really, he knew he wanted to be a modern-day cowboy, but that was it. So we went home and thought a bunch. We realized we had to start with the main character, give him a name, which was Gideon Tanner, and really make up an entire story for his life. And after we did that, then we went back and started writing the songs to fit his story. And once we got into it, not only was it a challenge, but it was so much fun to do that project. We just loved it, and we went in and demoed with my band the whole album, so we would have what sounded like a finished product to Kenny so he could get a good idea of it. And we played it for him, and he loved it and said, if I do Dreamer, will you do it as a duet with me? So it was before we'd moved to Nashville, quite a bit before. And so he recorded here. We came back to Nashville for the recording of Gideon and sang backgrounds on it, and we were part of that process. But it was, we both are so proud of that project, and I really loved doing that. I also, you know, love writing for films. I love projects like that that you can dig into and have something specific to write about. One of my favorite songs on the Chasin' Wild Trains album is called Goodnight Angel. And that came from going to a screening of a film called When They Were Soldiers. And the director wanted, I think every songwriter in Nashville was invited to this screening, and he wanted songs not to be in the film, but to be on a soundtrack album, songs inspired by the film. So I came home and thought for 2 or 3 weeks, okay, what could I write that would be a different point of view, not of a soldier being in battle, but what, or coming home, going to war, what would be unique? And what I came up with was write it from the point of view of the people at home, whether it be a partner, a wife, a husband, a mother, a father, of how much they missed the person they loved being away at war. And once I came up with that and realized I wanted to write it from that point of view, then the song, I went to the piano, because I write on the piano, just poured out. And my friend Angelo, who I wrote a couple of songs on the album with too, who was the first person to produce Kings of Leon, is such a talented dude. I mean, his writing, his producing, but I love his voice.
Oh, his yeah. Vocals on Chasin' Wild Trains are great.
I think he's just the best. And so I asked him if he'd come sing on Goodnight Angel with me, and I love what he did. I think it just makes it.
No question about it. We're talking with Kim Carnes here on Downtown. I want to go back early in your career. You signed with Jimmy Bowen originally, and we're writing, we're doing some demos, and what an impressive group of demo singers. Am I right that it was you, Don Henley, Glenn Frey, J.D. Souther, all recording demos?
Well, Jimmy Bowen had a really small publishing company, and Dave and I, along with the names you just mentioned, were signed to his publishing company. There were just it was great because it wasn't large. So we would all hang out together, sing on each other's demos that we'd written, and it was a wonderful time. We were all starting out, and there was a wonderful music scene in Hollywood, maybe a 3-block area, where everybody wrote. Everybody used the studios around there. And then at night, we'd go to this little Italian dive, Martoni's, and sit and drink wine and all talk about the latest songs we'd written or what we were going to do. And it was just a very hopeful, positive time. I feel so lucky to have been part of that. And, after maybe a couple years of writing for Bowen, Dave and I were standing in line at the Troubadour one night to see Van Morrison, and Glenn came up to us. We said, "Where have you been? We haven't seen you for, several weeks." And he said, "Oh, man, we started this new group, and it's going to be so great." And we said, what are you going to call it? And he said, "Well, we're going to call it the Eagles." And I think a month later, at most, Take It Easy came out, and the rest is history.
Yeah, it worked pretty well for them there. You also wrote songs with and for and performed on tour with a friend of our show. We were so sorry to hear of his passing earlier, David Cassidy.
Oh, gosh, it was so painful. I still can't believe it, just too young. But yes, in our early days, Dave and I were asked to go on the road just one weekend and do the first part of the show, and then David would come on after an intermission. And really, they wanted to just see if he could draw an audience, because he was right in the middle of shooting The Partridge Family, and they didn't know if he could do live shows. Well, you know, sold out immediately, arenas, Madison Square Garden, the Astrodome. So after that one weekend that was so successful, we ended up a good 2 years, maybe more, not only touring every weekend here. David would shoot his show during the week, and then we'd go out for Saturday and Sunday night shows in this country. And then we ended up doing a couple world tours. We went everywhere. Couple European tours, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, Hong Kong. It was just beyond fun. And David became a really, really good friend, and, you know, couldn't go out anywhere without being recognized and mobbed. So he'd come over and hang out at our house, and we would play the kind of music he really loved. I mean, in those days, Jeff Beck, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Led Zeppelin, it's what he loved. He'd bring his guitar, and we'd write songs a bunch. He ended up recording, and we just would laugh like crazy. It was a safe place for him, and he just was such a good guy. Best heart, biggest heart in the world, and the greatest sense of humor that I don't know if a lot of people really know that about him, but he was wonderful. And when he died, we were shocked and sad. You know, it just, again, way too young, too early.
We're talking with Kim Carnes here on Downtown. I think I first became aware of your music with You're a Part of Me, a couple different versions. I remember as a young radio guy grabbing it right out of the box when you did the duet with Gene Cotton, and said to my program director, you got to play this. It's going to be huge.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was, I think Gene was the first person to record it, and then I recorded it on my first A&M album. I think it was That Way. I don't know. But yes, that was one of the first early songs that I wrote. I loved when Gene came and asked if I'd do it as a duet with him. It worked. Again, we recorded, I came from L.A. to Nashville. We recorded that in Nashville also.
Bette Davis Eyes, of course, the song that just blew everything apart. It went to number one, stayed there for 9 weeks. And ironically, for somebody who's been such a successful songwriter, you didn't write that one. Jackie DeShannon and Donna Weiss wrote it. But you and your producer really changed the tone and the feel of Bette Davis Eyes.
Yeah, we did. I heard it. Donna sent me the demo, and I loved the concept. I loved the lyric. And we went in, I always like to record live, so we went in with the band, and we rehearsed it for at least 3 days, trying to figure out what to do with it, how to make it different. And whereas it wasn't dark and minor chords and kind of moody before, that's how we ended up doing it. Really, my keyboard player, Bill Como, after about day three, was sitting at his keyboard over in the corner and came up with the signature lick. And I remember looking at him just going, that's it. You did it. That's it. And everybody else just fell into place. We recorded it the next day, second take, live vocal, live everything. And then the mix ended up being a rough mix we did right before Christmas vacation, Christmas break, because I couldn't stand not to have. I'd probably recorded 5 or 6 songs for that album at that point, and I wanted to listen to them at home, and we could never beat that rough mix. It's just like why I love to do live vocals and cut things live. It's a performance, and every time you mix it live as opposed to an automated mix, it's a performance and it's different. And I swear, I know the difference. And I love, you know, I love that ingredient. So anyway, it was a rough mix and worked out pretty good.
Yeah, I would say so.
You know, what that record did for me was really solidify a worldwide following. And to this day, I go over every year and I play Europe, South America. I do television there, do live shows. And it's, you know, it brought the rest of the world to me, or me to them, all of the above. But it, you know, that was an extra bonus I'd had with writing, of course, first, but then success with records here, chart-wise, but in Europe, you know, not as much. So that changed really everything.
Is the story true that the song led to you becoming friends with Bette Davis?
Yeah, it did. She was so remarkable and gracious and wonderful. I went over to her house the first time. We did a photo together, a black and white by a really famous photographer of movie stars, George Harrell. And we met and talked a bunch. And she said, well, come back anytime. I would love to continue this conversation. So when the album went platinum, I called her and asked her if I could bring one over to her. And when I got to her place, she got a ladder and a hammer and nails and put it up on the wall. And we had several really great visits after that. And the first thing I saw when I walked into her house was a needlepoint pillow on a chair that says, "No guts, no glory," which is so perfect for her. I mean, that's how she lived her life and her whole career. Once in a while, if I would do a TV show, the phone would ring and I'd pick it up. And on the other end was, "Hello, Kim, this is Miss Bette Davis. I just want to tell you, I saw your show and I absolutely loved it."
Oh, that's wonderful.
You know, she was so dear, just wonderful. And told me, she would pace up and down the hall and tell me story after story of how difficult it was to be a woman and stand up for herself within the studio system in those days. You know, she was thought of as being temperamental. And she said, "I just only wanted to hold out for the roles that were really good, you know." Mm. And yeah, she was just remarkable. And boy, do I treasure that friendship big time.
You're also part of one of the most iconic performances of the 80s, a part of the group gathered together to perform We Are the World. I know that you talked about this with a friend of our show, Jeff Perlman, in a wonderful Q&A.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, that was great. It's on your website, and people should go there and check it out. But what was that experience like doing We Are the World?
As good as it gets. I mean, when we recorded it at A&M Studios with Quincy Jones, and before we walked in the studio, there was a big sign that said, "Leave your ego at the door." And everybody did. It was just, people were so happy to be there and be part of it. And it just was pure joy from that evening until the sun came up. You know, when we left to go home, it was morning, bright and sunny, and the record was finished. And again, so proud and lucky to have been part of that.
One of my favorite recordings of yours that you didn't write was a song you did, I think, on the Mistaken Identity album, When I'm Away From You, a great Frankie Miller tune. And you got together with Frankie just a few years back and did a duet with him.
Yeah, we didn't get together, in person. But his producer from London sent me several songs that were going to be considered for the album, and I picked the one we ended up doing the duet on. And I love Frankie. I had recorded a couple of his songs, and I love his voice. I love his writing. He's just the real deal. So I was thrilled to do that.
Well, you've had great success as a songwriter. Three of your songs have gone to number one on the country charts. Is that the focus for you now, is the writing?
All of the above, really. I still write several times a week, and I'm writing now for, I guess I don't really write for the next album. If I write something that I think I would want to record, then I just put it aside. If I think it should go to my publisher and be pitched to other artists, then I do that. But I still, you know, nothing, the other component is going on the road and doing live shows, and I'll always love doing that. And also, you know, after moving here, I do so many writer in the round shows, and with so many pals that are just like Matresa Bird and Angela, great songwriters, to get together, three or four of us, and do an in the round is really special. My favorite part of what I do really is the collaboration. I love my band. I love the other writers. I just love doing music with other people. I've always loved singing backgrounds. For anybody who asks, I'm there. And so I do it all. I do both.
You do. And the latest album, people need to listen to it. It's so good. Chasing Wild Train, songs like Just to See You Smile, Good Night Angel, Runaway that we played earlier, Too Far Gone. It's some of the best music of your career. Love it. Chasing Wild Trains. Kim Carnes.
Baby is where people can, the easiest place to get it.
Absolutely.
Amazon.
Well, Kim, been a fan of your work for a long time. It's a real delight for us to talk with you.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad this worked.
Thank you so much for making time for us, and we wish you continued success and good health.
Thank you, and thank you so much. I appreciate talking.
That's Kim Carnes here on Downtown.